Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I feel like I'm having deja vu. We're seeing the same playbook that we saw in 2020, where leading into the election, the president tried to sow doubt and undermine voters' confidence in the systems.
I think this is kind of a cheat, kind of an end around the current litigation we have trying to protect your personal voter information. Now, that having been said, number one, we're done with 2020. That's in the past.
I am not trying to interfere with somebody's right to smoke. They can get high any number of other ways that this bill doesn't implicate. But the moment that it does start to impact other people and their families, then it becomes an issue.
So folks, this is as good as it's going to get. I know some people are not happy it goes too far, and others it doesn't go far enough. This is as good as it gets.
I know how to get things done because I've been there. I can read a 1,000-page budget. I know what they're hiding in that. They're not going to get anything by me.
This should be a nonpartisan issue. We're workers who meet after school and before school using our First Amendment rights, who want to be able to be part of an organization. Why now? Why this?
And with me to talk about a pair of federal investigations into the 2020 election in Arizona, some changes in congressional races, and more are Jaime Molera of the firm Molera Alvarez. Jaime, good morning.
Good morning.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good morning to you.
Great to be here.
Jaime, I'm going to quote one of the great American philosophers, Yogi Berra, who once said, or allegedly said, it's deja vu all over again. We're living in the past, right? 2020 election season all over again here with these with the Trump administration trying to get some documents.
Well, it worked so well in 2020
for the Republicans, you mean, right? No,
for the Democrats, actually. So it's one of those things, Mark. I'm a little dumbfounded as to why they want to continue to play on something that I think most every Arizonan has forgotten about or moved on from. But when you're rehashing these things over and over again, I don't think it behooves the Republicans' ability to do two things. One, take away and win the seats that they want to get in the statewide election, and also hold the legislature. So it's just a playbook that I'm just a little bit at a loss to explain why they're doing that.
Do you think it could be a problem for Republicans running in Arizona?
It depends on how much they're going to continue this. I mean, right now, here we are in March. I mean, if this is going on in September, maybe. But I think a lot of folks are going to forget about it, and a lot of folks are going to move on, hopefully, at least from the Republican standpoint.
All right. Sam, we heard from Governor Hobbs just a moment ago saying her supposition is that the Trump administration is trying to sow doubt in election results in advance of an election that, you know, some pundits are saying is not necessarily going to be great for Republicans. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I'm just flabbergasted by the absurdity of it all, to Jaime's point from earlier. I mean, you know, this morning I opened up my phone and I got a memory from 6 years ago when my kindergartner, you know, was still in diapers, right? So we're still, you know, trying to relitigate something that is well, well far in the past. And really, if you look at the individuals involved, both Governor Hobbs, you know, when she was Secretary of State, and then now Secretary of State Fontes, have done nothing but uphold the integrity of our electoral process. And I think for me, it's not as much concerning about what's happening with the integrity of the vote, which is absolutely something that should be talked about, but also the integrity of that personal information. The chain of custody of those files is completely gone. And while my vote is public, right, that I voted, all of that data should absolutely not be. I have not changed my mother's maiden name, nor have I not changed my Social Security number in the last 6 years. So if that information gets out, that's where my deep concern is, because I think that most voters see this entire facade as the absurd charade it is.
Well, and I think to the point of the personal information, Sam, we saw that Secretary of State Fontes, Attorney General Chris Mays this week sent a letter to the county recorders basically saying, even if you get subpoenaed, do not hand over this information, in large part because of that, because of the concern about the disclosure of personal information.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which potentially puts county recorders in a tricky situation. I'm not a lawyer, but I would think if you're subpoenaed and you say, no thanks, like that puts you in a bit of danger.
That's right. And the president isn't a lawyer as well, right? And I think that that's you can tell and really get the sense that this is nothing but politics, nothing but dredging up old history that has been long settled, and it does nothing to advance the conversation. We should be focused on the important issues of today, like solving our water crisis and solving the affordability crisis. And instead, we're talking about cyber ninjas from, 6 years ago.
Do you think we're still going to be talking about cyber ninjas 6 years later, Jaime?
No. No. But here's the thing that again, to put a fine point on this, why I don't understand. In 2022, which is just 2 years after the 2020 election, of course, the Republicans and Trump did very well in Arizona. We all know that. They were able to mount a very good get out the vote. They were able to mount a stronger organization that they did in 2020. So you would think they'd want to build on that. And particularly with the growth of Turning Point, which has been a very strong entity in being able to get more Republicans registered. Right mm-hmm. now they enjoy about a 330,000 registration advantage over Democrats. Building on those kinds of things seems to me that that's a much better playbook than dredging up things that happened, 4 years ago.
But 2022, though, with all that, Democrats still won the top three statewide elected offices.
Candidates matter. Candidates matter. And I think we had a Kerry Lake that was also running. That's a good point, because Kerry Lake was running based on what happened in 2020. And that really didn't serve her well. And she was going out of her way to get Republicans to not come out and vote for her. She was talking about the McCain Republicans that she absolutely didn't want. She was making statements saying that, abortion should lead to murder charges. Those kinds of things, I think that kind of rhetoric, and you couple that with the voter fraud allegations, really didn't help her very much, and it showed. Mm. And so I think that's some of the things we should learn from and then move on.
Before we move on, though, I just want to make one last point about that yawning gap of the voter registration, right? Mm-hmm. As Jaime pointed out, it's about 330,000 right now. So any claim that Secretary Fontes is making this, a partisan political fight is absolutely ridiculous. He is working to protect the personal information and the voting integrity of every Arizonan. And there's actually the math shows that he's supporting more Republicans and more independents than he is Democrats by doing so. So this is not at all a partisan fight. This is about voter integrity and protecting personal information.
That's why a lot of Democrats don't like Adrian Poynter.
Sam, let me stick with you asking about speaking of elections, a congressional race. Late this week, an activist named Kai Newkirk said that he was going to be running the Democratic primary against Greg Stanton. That's the 4th congressional district. He doesn't have much time to get his signatures and get on the ballot. Is this a serious challenge to Congressman Stanton?
One thing I'll say about Congressman Stanton is that he will take it seriously. And I think that is something that says a lot about his political acumen and his long track record of serving his community in an elected capacity. One of my many character flaws is I'm a huge Aaron Sorkin fan, right? one of the things that was a current theme or a theme throughout The West Wing was you always run a race 5 points down, and I think that Congressman Stanton's going to do so. But you noted the structural challenges that this individual has and even collecting signatures. But once, even if they were to get on the ballot, Congressman Stanton is a ranking member of a subcommittee on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee in Congress. He leads a coalition of the New Democrats, or kind of the Blue Dog Working Group, so-called. So, Congressman Stanton is not going to go anywhere unless it's his decision to go somewhere. But I also think that having challenges from the left or the right is really good to make sure that everyone still is serving the communities that they represent with integrity and relevancy. So if that is one of the outcomes, I'm happy to see a challenger, but I'm extremely confident in Congressman Stanton's ability to gain his seat again next cycle.
All right. So Jaime, on the Republican side, we saw a change in the 5th district. That's the Southeast Valley, Andy Biggs' district, right, that he's leaving, of course, to run for governor. Former state representative Travis Grantham is dropping out of the race, saying he's gotten called up. He's in the National Guard. He's gotten called up. Can't turn in his signatures, not on the ballot. But he was running in a race where the Pinal County Sheriff, Mark Lamb, who had previously run for U.S. Senate, pretty good name ID, also a Trump endorsement, is kind of the conventional wisdom, is at least he's seen as the front runner in that race.
Correct. And Travis Grantham has a very good reputation. He's very well liked. I think he's seen as a very thoughtful political leader. But going against Mark Lamb, polls are showing that it was pretty clear that Mark had support of the base. He certainly had support of the president, but mm-hmm. also of organizations that I mentioned earlier, like Turning Point, that are very much behind him. So it would have been a very difficult feat for Grantham to overcome that. So I think him bowing out does a couple of things. One, it helps the Republicans coalesce around the candidate, but more importantly, it doesn't take away the resources that I think other areas are going to be they're going to need, and they're going to need to start building that organization in order to fend off some of these Democrat challenges.
Was that a district that Republicans would have had to spend heavily in to begin with? Because
no,
it's a pretty red district.
It is a red district, but when you think about the kinds of resources you need in a primary and those things, it takes away from other areas that they would want to put their time and effort into. So, yeah, the Republicans are going to keep that seat. There's no doubt about it. But the organization and resources that they're going to need in a CD1 or in the Juan Suscomani's district, that's where they're going to need to really start to bolster
for
up.
National Republicans.
Correct.
You're talking about. Okay. Sam, Governor Hobbs has already vetoed a number of bills this year. Maybe she'll break one of the records she's already set in her term. But one of the vetoes, her most recent one, was a license plate bill. Arizona has a number of license plates featuring any number of causes and that sort of thing. But this one would have had a photo or a picture of Charlie Kirk on it. Some of the money would have gone to Turning Point USA. She, in her veto letter, said that the bill was injecting politics into what should be a nonpartisan thing. A lot of Freedom Caucus members in the legislature said the governor was inserting politics into what should be a nonpartisan thing. What do you make of all this?
I think that was entirely predictable. The veto was predictable, but also the introduction of the legislation to earn that veto, right? This is absolutely one of those, you know, media friendly kind of areas where people want to get talking about it. On a very, very personal basis, I loathe license plate bills. as a lobbyist, they gum up the process and, you know, everyone has their own, you know, kind of dog in that fight. I think we're somewhere in the neighborhood of like 3,000 different options you can have. I'm kidding about that, but it sure feels like that. But I think that got wrapped up in here. I mean, frankly, I would be somewhat disappointed if I was running a license plate bill on any issue in the legislature currently, because I wonder if maybe there's just going to be vetoes on all license plate bills from here on out to kind of help make that point. And previous governors and previous, you know, speakers of the House and Senate presidents have said as much. The idea of you know, supporting private fundraising through a public vehicle has been, you know, a philosophical conversation with or without this, you know, dramatic overlay of the Charlie Kirk conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Jaime, does this – whether or not you believe that, you know, to Sam's point, that, you know, this structure should be set up where, you know, you pay a little extra for a particular mm-hmm. license plate, some of the money goes to the cause, so the rest of it goes to the state, whether or not you think that is appropriate or not, is it in any way surprising to you that the governor vetoed the Charlie Kirk license plate?
Well, a little bit. And by the way, this is an exaggeration, 3,000. There's only 2,900 license plates. I mean, I looked it up and you have the Cardinals, you have the Suns, but you also have an Alice Cooper license
yep.
plate.
There's one for the environment. There's one like
for everything.
In God We Trust. There's the the pro-life.
The only thing I think it would have helped the governor if she would have signed it is to say, look, you know, I disagree with Charlie Kirk. I disagreed with his movement. However, I think it's important for folks to have that opportunity to celebrate whomever they feel is important to them. And from a political standpoint, I think people would have thought, wow, that's a pretty bold move. But because the governor is going to need to start to capture, you know, that base of centrists that I think is going to be important in her election. And so just from that standpoint, I mean, I'm not that surprised, but I think from a political maneuver, it could have helped her.
Interesting. Also this week, guys, the State House approved a bill on short-term rentals. This has been an issue going back basically since Governor Ducey signed the bill into law several years ago.
Yeah,
allowing short-term rentals. A number of cities have come forward and said, look, there are too many of them. There's not enough housing. We have real problem. Neighbors don't necessarily like them. This bill allows for certain restrictions on the number of people who are staying there. It allows a little more timeline to in the number of violations, gives time to work for those to work through the courts and for a city to be able to revoke a license. What it does not do is give cities the ability to say, this is how many we want. This is how many per neighborhood. This is where we don't want them. This has been a perennial Jaime issue at the legislature. Basically, since that time, cities like Sedona seem to be really struggling.
Right.
We heard a few moments ago the sponsor of the bill saying this is as good as it's going to get. So we know it's not everything, but this is what we can do. Is this sort of the art of the possible?
It is. I mean, but if you think about where it's come to in this legislation, a few years ago, I thought they would have been able to get that. So it's starting to move in that direction, and I think it's because of these stories that are happening when you folks in Sedona, folks in Cave Creek, and we talked earlier about how Senator Kavanaugh, who's a very strong conservative, believes in property rights, but he was married to a wife of Fountain Hills.
The mayor of Fountain Hills.
The mayor of Fountain Hills, and who witnessed firsthand these short-term rentals run amok, and they wanted to have some restrictions on them. And he's been a voice of that for many, many years. So I think as time progresses, if this legislation doesn't prove to be as satisfactory as I think a lot of folks would like to see happen, then I think you're going to see more and more of these types of bills go through the legislature.
Would you expect this to maybe be as good as it can get now? But to Jaime's point, maybe something else comes down the road?
Absolutely. I mean, I think policy generally is always a moving target. And I think that Representative Bliss was right to identify that this was as good as it was going to get right now. And I also do think I haven't tracked the legislation closely, but as I understand it, you know, it really does have a targeted focus on so-called bad actors. And if you are an operator of an Airbnb and you adhere to the rules and regulations, or a VRBO too, I didn't want to be specific to any operator there. But I think that if you're following the rules, if you're following the regulations, there's no reason why you can't continue to operate. And, you know, one of the ways that I approach this question as well is I'm very proud of my former board service with a group called Local First Arizona, and we did some research a number of years ago that said, you know, we spend billions of dollars as Arizonans in Southern California throughout the summer. And if we just redirected a small portion of that to the amazing jewels that we have here in Arizona, whether it be Cottonwood or the Sonoyta Wilcox area, or even up in the well-known Flagstaff or Grand Canyon area, right? That's a huge boon to our economy. So I think we wanted to balance the idea of being too restrictive to short-term rentals, because we don't want to disincentivize individuals from exploring what Arizona has to offer. But absolutely, in some of the urban areas, the party houses, I think, needed to be addressed and whatnot. And I think this legislation goes a long way to do that.
Can you foresee a time when cities would regain their ability to put caps on short-term rentals, or say, you know, maybe even a cap citywide or a townwide, or a cap on particular neighborhoods?
My understanding is that the League of Cities and Towns was very supportive of where this legislation ended up. So I think, you know, positionally, I'm not sure how they would say, well, thank you so much for this, but now we're going to, you know, change our minds. So I'm not sure exactly if I would agree with that direction. But I do think that this is not a done deal. There's not, you know, it's not a solved matter. This is going to evolve, because this is a market driven problem. And the legislature always lags the market, whether we're talking about technology or housing or you know, natural resources. Policy will always lag the market.
Well, Jaime, you kind of alluded to this, but it's such an interesting sort of philosophical political question when it comes to property rights, which for, you know, years has been a pretty big platform on the Republican side, because you have the property rights of, if I own a house, I should be allowed to do with it what I want. If I want to rent it out, I should be allowed to rent it out. Right. But also, if I live next door to seven houses that are all rented out, like the argument is, like, my property rights should be, I shouldn't have like new people coming in every 3 days who are throwing wild parties. It just seems like a really interesting sort of philosophical conversation.
Well, in answer to your last question, that's the reason why I think it won't change. They won't give the cities that kind of control over short-term rentals unless the power changes in the legislature, unless it flips and Democrats are in control. Because if you look at what happened with even things like that woman that wanted to sell tamales from her house, and the governor vetoed that particular bill. Republicans have philosophically been saying for years, look, if you have that property, yes, you should have those rights. Now, does it give you the right to affect your neighbors? And that's the argument that Senator Kavanaugh always uses. And I don't mind what you do with your property, but if you affect me as a neighbor or other neighbors and their ability to have a comfortable life, then that should be that should come into question.
Which is also kind of the argument we're hearing with the bill that Senator J.D. Mesnard is bringing up in terms of marijuana smoke
Correct.
Going into people's yards. Like it kind of like where does your property right end and where does my property right begin? And maybe it's like over the block wall in your backyard.
So I was at a friend's house not too long ago in Tempe, and that's a very real issue.
Very interesting. All right, guys, we'll have to leave it there. Jaime Molera, Sam Richard, thanks you both for the conversation.
Thank
you. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.